Ooh, and then my sermon flew away. That's not helpful for anybody. Thank you so much, Dr. Eaton. That was lovely. Whew. Good morning. Today, our scripture reading is going to be in the midst of our sermon, so I'm not going to sing it or read it twice for you guys. But we're going to be reading out of Exodus 1. So if you have your Bible, if you want to grab one from the pew, if you want to look on it on your fancy smartphone, whichever way you would like to follow along with the text with me, I would really love to do that with you. I've been really overwhelmed with the current events that have been happening in our country. It's been really heartbreaking and really overwhelming for me. And I know that many people are also feeling the weight and the burden of what is happening. And when I was looking at the lectionary today, this passage came out, and it felt really appropriate. Because have you ever noticed that when bad things happen, everyone blames God? She's like, no. And then when good things happen, we take credit, right? Well, it makes me wonder what our understanding and interpretation of God's promises are to us. It makes me curious, do I really understand what God was promising at the beginning of creation? Do I really understand the covenant that was made with Abraham? I'm not sure. And then as I went through Exodus 1, I realized maybe there's something here. But to set the scene for you guys, Exodus 1 is right after Genesis. I know, surprising. And it's also the setup for one of the big hitters, big characters of the biblical text, Moses. Now, just let's hear, you know that I like to participate when I preach. So what are some of the big highlights of Moses' life? There's a burning bush involved. Got him out of Egypt. The basket in the river. Yeah, Miriam, mom made the basket, pushed him down the river. He killed an Egyptian, and he skedaddled out of town and was shunned from both the Egyptians and the Hebrews. That's parting of the Red Sea. That was a big one. That was a really big one. Negotiating with the Pharaoh. Recipient, my gosh. Do you see what I'm talking about? Big heavy hitter here. Recipient of the Ten Commandments. The plagues, big deal. There was a lot of them. You know, there were like frogs involved. It was very, very intense. We mentioned that he went down his mom put him in a basket, sent him down the river, Pharaoh's daughter, she found him. He was then sent back to his mom for a little bit of time and until he was able to be weaned, and then he was raised by the Egyptians. So he had a bit of an identity crisis at one point, so kind of trying to figure out who he is. So he's ethnically Hebrew, but raised Egyptian, but not really sure what's happening. There was a lot there. So this is the first chapter of what Moses is born into, okay? This is his setup. If you're into plays and setting the scene, this is what the narrator would be preaching, would be speaking to you to set the scene. And so we know who Moses is now, and now we're going to dive into the text, and we're going to go kind of chunk by chunk. So let's see, let's do Exodus 1, 1 through 7. These are the names of the son of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob. each with his household. Reuben, Simon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, thank you, you guys say it much. It sounds like a science fiction name, but that's okay. Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. The total number of people born to Jacob was 70. Joseph was already in Egypt. Then Joseph died and all his brothers and that whole generation. But the Israelites were fruitful and prolific. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong so that the land was filled with him. Now, if we think back all the way to the very beginning, there's a few things that come to light from this text. We realize that verse 7 is a throwback to Genesis when God gave out the desire for Adam and Eve to go and multiply, right? But it's also a throwback to Abraham as well when he said, you're going to have all these descendants. And so we have a separation of time. This is really the splitting between Genesis and Exodus. We're saying, okay, not only has there been this separation of time, has this whole generation passed on, but God is following through with God's part of the bargain, with God's part of the promise. And the Israelites are fruitful. They're making babies. All the babies are being made, which is great news. And we also see this shift happening from focusing on Jacob's family and Joseph's family and all the 12 families to the Israelites becoming a group of people, right? So there's multiple families happening, and now they're more of a nation than they are just like, oh, we're, you know, having a little family get together. It's now like, no, we are a big crew, and we are filling the land. Okay. So that's the setup. We know that there's been a big chunk of time that has happened between then and now. 8-10. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we are. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase, and in the event of war, join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. So we have a huge shift in power. And the leader is using hate language to oppress a group of people. It doesn't feel that far away. So we have God, this time where God has been actively blessing the Hebrew people. We have God saying, I'm going to continue the work of creation that I started in Genesis through this group of people. And Pharaoh sees this blessing of life as a threat to himself and a threat to his nation. So we have already an opposition happening. We have life versus death. We have God versus Pharaoh. And it probably was a huge shock for the Hebrew people. They had been doing pretty good. Everyone remembered Joseph. They knew his legacy. They understood the work that he did. And now, all of a sudden, like, very abruptly, life is not the same. And you have Pharaoh here telling Egypt, telling all of his people that this specific group is the enemy. Whew. Thank you for the nod. It's feeling heavy and it's feeling really intense because it feels really present. So this next section of 11 through 14 is Egypt's response to Pharaoh's statements. And it says, therefore, they set taskmasters over them to oppress them with forced labor. They built supply cities Pithom, and Ramses for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians became to dread the Israelites. The Egyptians became ruthless and imposing tasks on the Israelites and made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in every kind of field labor. They were ruthless in all the tasks that were imposed upon them. So we have a man of power who has said, this group of people are a threat to us because they're having a lot of babies and they're multiplying the earth. So we need to get rid of them. Not only do we need to get rid of them, we are going to put them to work for our life. So we're going to put them in a place of oppression, a place of death, and we're going to make them build the cities that are going to help provide life for us. That's what the Pithom and Ramses are actually store cities. So this is where all of the grain and different crops would be stored for the Egyptian people. And so these things that are supposed to be about producing life are being created and built by death. Whew, that feels, again, I'm going to say it again, it feels really heavy. We have a lot going on here. And yet, despite the circumstances, God continues to bless because they continued to multiply. So in the midst of oppression, there's still blessing, which doesn't logically make sense to me. And it's not how I want it to work. I don't want oppression and blessing to coexist. I want them to be separate. I want oppression to happen and then some huge battle and we win and it's awesome and God is great and then everything's roses. Church of the Roses. No, but that's not how it is. And I think each one of us in this room understand that this is not how it is. Blessing and oppression happen simultaneously, and it's overwhelming, and I don't like it. And yet it's not enough oppression for Pharaoh. Pharaoh wants more. And he's realizing that his plan to eradicate the Hebrew nation is not working. He's like, well, I put them at task, but it's not killing enough of them fast enough. What am I going to do? So we have a scene change. 15 through 17. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Sapphira and the other Pua, when you act as midwives for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, she shall live. But the midwives feared God. They did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, and they let the boys live. Now, some fun things about the name Sapphira and Pua is that Sapphira actually means beautiful, and Pua is a Canaanite name, but it actually means splendid. So Pharaoh, grumpy Pharaoh, whiny Pharaoh, goes to beautiful and splendid and says, okay, I know your job is to bring life into the world, but how about you just go completely against that and kill babies? So he asks beautiful and splendid to create death. And yet, beautiful and splendid, fear God. And when it says fear God, it means trust God. They trust that their lives are in God's hands. They trust that their people are in God's hands. And they trust that when they choose life over death, that God will be with them. Because if we look at the last few verses, God was still there. God did not abandon them. God was still present and continued to bless them, even in the midst of this chaos. So Pharaoh's desire to bring about death in opposition to God's blessing was thwarted by these two midwives who were like, meh, I'm out. I'm choosing God. And they chose life over death. They chose blessing over curse. And they chose truth over falsity. Let's read 18 and 19. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, why have you done this and allowed the boys to live? The midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives even come. So when I was titling, I kind of went through the chunks and I titled these two chunks together, and it was called Whining Pharaoh and Beautiful Lies. Because beautiful and splendid outwit the king, the powerful one, for life. He was like, why are you ruining my plan? I had such a great plan and you're ruining everything. And they were like, oh, well, you see, they use his prejudice against the Hebrew people as a way to protect not only themselves, but to continue to protect the lives and those babies. It was a lie to protect life. In one of the commentaries I read, they called it a creative disobedience. And they actually talked about how that creativity is paralleled with God's own creative, life-giving power. And the reason that they chose to do this is because they knew that God was more about creating life than creating death. And they wanted to partner in that creativity with God, just like the beginning when God asked Adam to partner alongside God in creating and cultivating the names of all of the animals. They trusted that God would not leave them. So what was God's response? Verse 20 and 21. So God dealt with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very strong. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. When it says dealt with, it makes it sound really harsh, but it's actually more like God wanted to bless them some more. So again, there's more continued blessing. There was, in the midst of all of this chaos and pain, God was like, good work, team. Have some more babies. And then there's this last verse. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, every boy that is born to the Hebrews shall be thrown into the Nile, and you shall let every girl live. The life circumstances kept going. Pharaoh was defeated by two midwives who chose to exist, to participate in God's creative, life-giving work. This was a war. This was a war that God was fighting for the Hebrew nation and for the creation that God has been cultivating since the beginning of Genesis. It was a war over life versus death. And this was the war that Moses was born into. How do we fight for life? I think we all have a lot of ways that we fight for life. Here in this church specifically, we fight for life when people get up at the earliest crack of dawn and go make breakfast for 120 high school students. We're fighting for life. We're fighting for life when there are bags of food in our food cupboard in the office and people come in and ask for a bag of food because they can't afford it. We're fighting for life. We're fighting for life when The deacons choose to support our veterans in our nation, in our area, because they haven't been treated fairly or equally. We're fighting for life when we have Pastor Cindy, who encourages us to think about what it means to love our Muslim neighbor. We are fighting for life as a community when we walk out of these doors and we choose life over death, when we choose love over hate. As a country, we are fighting for life when there is a rally of right-winged, very hateful group that is going to be marching in San Francisco, and they decide because there might be a counter-protest, they're not going to show up, but those counter-protesters still show up, and they fight for life, and they name that love is more important than hate. We fight for life when we think creatively about how to save our earth. There's a whole group, the Ocean Cleanup Group, they recognize there is a giant garbage patch in our oceans. And they have come up with a crazy solar boat that is gonna go and pick up in the next 5 years almost 50% of all of that plastic, the 5 trillion pieces of plastic that are in our ocean. That is fighting for life. How do you fight for life? God was and is in the midst of this cosmic fight for life over death. So is it God's fault that bad things happen? Or is God hard at work in this battle for life? Will you join God's fight? Will you be a midwife that ushers in life at the risk of your own death? Will you have creative disobedience? Will you join God in this fight for life?